We're here on borrowed time. We just need to be grateful. We need to live our life as best as we can in terms of loving others, serving others, forgiving others.
Are you ready to unlock conversations of resilience, triumph, and transformation? Well, you're in the right place. This is the Knocking Doors Down podcast. Your host, Jason LaChance, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who have overcome life's toughest challenges and are sharing their experience, knowledge, and insight into how you can do just the same. If you're checking out the podcast for the first time, hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening on, or hey, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, leave a thumb up and a comment on the video, because not only do I see it, but so do my guests. As you may or may not know, I'm in long-term recovery for addiction, and I've struggled with some mental health issues. And through that, I became an advocate for sobriety and mental health. As well, I'm a certified recovery coach. And on this episode, I'm speaking with the awesome Carrie Schwier. Carrie is the creator of Gray Tonic, helping leaders thrive personally and professionally, one gray area at a time. She helps individuals combat whatever that thing is that's holding them back. It might be drugs, alcohol, or some other underlying condition or issue. Carrie and I have an amazing conversation, and she's so insightful. We touch on a variety of things, including how we have to learn to sit with our feelings and what they're trying to tell us. We also shatter that limiting belief that someone cannot undergo a complete transformation. We discuss how you can. We also touch on reframing trauma and ditching the victim mentality. We also converse about an area that I personally struggled with, my right to be here. Not only to be here, but to thrive as an individual. Plus, we discuss what happens when one person in a relationship gets sober and the other person doesn't. We discuss those topics and so much more, including random questions, and Carrie leaves us with the final thoughts on this episode of Knocking Doors Down. Carrie Schwier, thank you for joining me on Knocking Doors Down.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. I hope it really blesses those that hear it.
Absolutely. And it's one of the cool things, both of us, of course, living a life of sobriety that just come your way. And as when I got your, I'm like, yes, I have to speak with Carrie. She sounds amazing. Please, let's make this happen. So it's one of those cool blessings that, hey, this is going to be selfish for me. I'm going to pick your brain a lot.
Oh, go for it. I'm here all for it. All of it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Well, I start my day with gratitude every single day. So three things you're grateful for today.
Oh, my gosh. I am so grateful that I have a strong faith, that I have learned to release all anxiety and stress and give it to him. And I was really stressed about something, and I released it last night and had all my faith in that. And this morning I found out what I was hoping for did come true, and it worked out like I was hoping it would. And so I didn't have to worry. So that's really great. I'm grateful for my new rescue dog, Noah, yeah, who is the light of my life. He just makes me smile. And I'm grateful that I was able to bathe him today without him giving me a fight. So, because he needed it. And so I am so, so grateful. I try, and I do the same. So I'm so glad to hear that you do that as well.
Oh, it's incredibly powerful. And just to let people know, Noah is a bigger dog. We're not talking a little teacup, or anything. So
yeah, he's a pit bull mix. I love pits. I just lost a pit bull mix that was the love of my life. His name was Frank, and we rescued Frank when I was about 6 months sober. And I really wanted to have a companion that I could spend time with and pour my heart and soul into as a rescue. And, the saying, like, who rescued who, right? And so he was my everything. He was my buddy, my full-time friend that was with me all the time. I work from home, of course, having my own business. But, we really had a strong bond. So when he unexpectedly passed in January, from lung cancer, which I didn't even know he had. Literally, he coughed up blood on January 1st and he was gone by January 8th. So it was very unexpected and rocked my world in a lo and behold, we found Noah on a rescue site, the same rescue site I found Frank. And here he is. So I'm really pleased to have someone else, another dog back in my life.
Absolutely. I mean, what an amazing bond. I mean, you know, six months into sobriety, and we're such babies in the world again, to a certain extent. How did you, what was the grieving process maybe for you? Cause I had a great loss near the end of the year, but a dog as well, our dog and a dear friend. I mean, literally in days. But I noticed the grieving process was very different for me now. You know, I'm in my longest stint of sobriety. I've got about 7 years total. I'm over 3 years right now. And a lot of my moments of relapse really was surrounding grief.
Yeah. Well, grief is one of those feelings. You know, as a coach, I really spent a lot of time looking at emotions and feelings. And the reason why we chose to drink or use is because we don't like to sit with our feelings. You know, we want to escape them. We're either chasing a feeling or escaping something, whether it's past childhood trauma or somebody at work just made you angry, or you didn't get finished what you wanted to get done today. You just, you know, didn't go your way. We tend to act upon how we feel. Not we tend to, we do act upon the way we feel. And this is what gets us in trouble. Instead of stopping to pause and reflect before we act and know it's okay to not be okay. And so grief is one of those human emotions that is so deeply rooted to sorrow that it's very easy to want to numb it out so you don't feel that deep grief. I mean, when Frank passed the weekend before we put him down, oh my gosh, they call it anticipatory grief, knowing that you're not going to have him or her, you know, relative or an animal any longer. And the pain was so severe for me that I didn't ever think about drinking. I'm coming up on 8 years this year for me, and it's all just right. No longer a thing, but I still had the feeling of, I hate the way I feel right now, but I also knew that this was part of the process. And instead, I had to turn to gratitude for all the times that I did share with Frank and all that he had given to me. And just, it was more of a selfish reason for me to not want him to go, but I had to honor him for him, you know, for his little soul, and be okay with not being okay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, anytime we have a feeling that crushes us emotionally or angers us or whatever, you know, we have to remind ourselves, we're human. This is part of the human experience, that we don't always have to act upon it. We just have to acknowledge it. And sometimes moving into gratitude as quickly as you can, finding the things that you are grateful for in those moments, even when it's regarding death, you know, you can tend to turn yourself around where you're using more of your logical brain and not your limbic brain, where we, you know, act without thinking.
Yeah, that the action upon how the state of our nervous system, right? And with Gray Tonic, you know, your coaching that you do with people. I mean, you work with a range of people, you know, business leaders, you know, high performers. Is this something with Gray Tonic that you see a lot, that there is just that? I don't know if cope is the right word, but the right tools to process it. I mean, you what you said about gratitude is huge. You know, I know for me, in the loss that I had, I remember I was sharing at a recovery group, and the irony of the friend that I lost, was in the same church that where his funeral service was just days before. And that was my share. And it was the first time it really dawned on me. I'm processing differently, because I said, I was just so grateful to have known this amazing person. And that's where hurt was, you know, is that, gosh, I don't get to see the amazing things and be the small little minute part of what my friend Ryan was doing with his life and touching so many people.
Yeah. You know, the hardest thing when someone dies is those that are left behind, you know, not necessarily the person. And we have to realize that you know, we are only here for a short amount of time. And I think most of us forget that from time to time. We just kind of live our life willy-nilly, and there isn't the state of being present and grateful. And, you know, I mean, we hear it all the time, like, oh, we need to really appreciate every single day because you don't know what tomorrow will bring. But man, is that true? Your life could change in an instant. And I realize even on rainy days or gloomy days, I'm so grateful for those days because it gives me the opportunity to stay in my pajamas and watch Netflix and not feel so guilty. That, by the way, that rarely ever happens. I'm not a TV watcher, but you know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where we just need to acknowledge that we are going to experience a lot of heartache in our life, and it's better to approach it clear-minded, understanding, not trying to understand why this is happening, but understanding that everything happens exactly the way that it's supposed to. There's something greater than us, whether that's a higher power, God, universe, creator, whatever you want to say. For me, it's God. I'm a Christian, so for me, it's definitely God.
Same.
But I feel that when we really know that and we believe it, we're here on borrowed time. We just need to be grateful. We need to live our life as best as we can in terms of loving others, serving others, forgiving others, and just living as close to, you know, how Jesus taught us to live. And that's what I try to do. So, yeah. You know, it's not always easy. Trust me.
No, it's not. And same, my faith is Christianity. And, God, I heard it was the other day. I'm in this group of gentlemen that's get a great devotional every day. Matter of fact, I need to get it today. Craig, well, you're slacking, buddy. But there was a parable the other day that it just really resonated with me when I was trying to understand. And it was weird because it lined up exactly what our pastor's been talking about and how God doesn't make mistakes and God wanting to live with you. You know, I always looked at the relationship with God as his circle up here, earth circle down here. And the pastor made it very clear that the overlap is where God wants you. And it was like mind blowing. So this parable comes through the other day, and it not from the Bible, but it was about a king and his servant, and they're out hunting. And they get separated. Well, then a wild beast attacks the king. It bites off his pinky, loses his pinky, so he throws his servant in the slammer. Well, then he goes out hunting again, and the king gets captured by these a tribe of people that do human sacrifice to their god. Well, when they notice his pinky's gone, they realize that he's not a whole human, so they let him go. Well, he comes back. And he lets his servant out of prison, and he tells him, you know, that these people, they were going to sacrifice me, but I didn't have my pinky. And he goes, I'm not understanding. He goes, well, if you think about it, had you not imprisoned me, I would have been out there with you. They would have captured us both. They would have sacrificed me and let you go. He goes, but you put me in prison. He goes, God doesn't make mistakes. And I was like, oh,
that's right.
Oh, wow. And I think that's the weird thing about the gratitude, right? Guy in prison, maybe he could go to anger, lost a pinky, go to anger. And it's like, some of these things really play out to be preparing you. That's how I look at my addiction and my recovery and helping people.
Yeah.
And I know you help a tremendous amount of people. I mean, I've seen the testimonials on your website, which that link is in the description if people want to find out more about Carrie. I mean, seeing that transformation with folks.
Oh, thank you. I am so blessed to do what I do. I felt like I was called to do this work, and I have had the absolute pleasure of working with some incredible humans. And most are business owners or leaders, but not all. In my group program, you know, it was a mix of kind of everyone, but my one-on-one clients tend to be the more like in that leadership role or owning a business, because, you know, they don't feel comfortable going to AA or going into something of recovery per se, but they know that there's a problem, which is why I focus on the gray areas of drinking rather than more of severely abusing or needing recovery. And, you know, when I first quit drinking, there wasn't anything like me, at least that I was aware of at the time. And, you know, I did go the what we would consider like a traditional route of recovery. I went to AA when I thought the program was great. And I think every human should go through a 12-step program because it's a great program. Like everyone can benefit. But it wasn't a great fit for me personally. And that's okay. You know, like I tell people who come to me, they're like, well, you know, should I try AA? And my answer is always like, yes, try everything, because it didn't, you know, work for me necessarily. And I don't want to say work, it just wasn't a good fit. I mean, it works if you work it, which I did. And that was fine. I gained a lot of knowledge, but it wasn't a great fit for me personally. And that is okay, right? Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of ways to work on your relationship with alcohol and or addiction. And so that became like this alternative, if you will, but I'm also trained in leadership coaching and training as well. So I do a lot of work with them regarding, you know, whether it's their career or even their personal life with their spouse. You know, they tend to be closer to my age, and I won't give away my age, but I am over 50. So I had the best compliment today. They thought I was in like my late 30s, early 40s. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Had you not have told me you had adult children and all that, I wouldn't have guessed either. So.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And you know what? I will say this because I just think it's really relevant, is that I had a friend, I haven't talked to her in a while, maybe like, I don't know, 7, 8 years, right? Actually, before I quit drinking was the last time I had talked to her. And recently she said to me, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean? She goes, why do you keep looking younger and better the older you get? Like, what is your secret? Did you get something done? You know, like meaning surgery or something. I said, no. I said, it's called being free of alcohol. It's being committed to myself. It's being totally aligned and truly happy for the first time in my life. That's what the difference is. And I have I don't want to say a client because he's not technically a client, but somebody in Thailand who I've been kind of working with a little bit. And he said to me the one day, he goes, you know what, Carrie, I realized that, and he runs a big business, right? He goes, I realize that being sober is an absolute superpower, that if I'm not at my full capacity, I cannot operate at this high of a level. And that is so true for all of my clients, right? Mm-hmm. It's when we start introducing some sort of substance into our system, we can't operate at the highest level. We can't be totally clear and running on premium fuel with 12 cylinders. You know, we're like spitting through on a 4-cylinder, right? So nothing against 4-cylinder engines, by the way, but you know. This girl prefers the higher engine.
I love the car analogies. You're speaking my language right there.
Yeah. Listen, I like Italian cars. Give me a 12-cylinder all day long. And yeah, right. I mean, only Ferrari. There's only a couple manufacturers out there that are still making 12 cylinders, but. Anyway, that's another story for another day.
Oh, well, it's okay. It could be a little ironic. I'm wearing a Lewis Hamilton sweatshirt. And next year, going to Ferrari for F1. So
That's right. He left Mercedes, the big shakeup. We'll see what happens.
I agree. And I think Knocking Doors Down by Carlos Vieira, now available wherever you get audiobooks.
I wasn't done partying, and I didn't want the binge to end. I think I knew that when I finally got home, I'd have to face what I had done, and I wasn't ready to do that. Being responsible for my actions wasn't something I was looking forward to. I had abandoned my wife and baby, my family, and my business. I wanted to avoid the shame of returning to what I had left behind. Even though I was not yet going home, I wasn't sure I had enough resources to continue the binge.
Click the link in the podcast description to find out more. Let me ask you about maybe why AA wasn't a continual thing for you. Again, it's not that it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I give the credit to it saved my life. And I still do attend 12-step group meetings, but not as frequent as I used to, because I got to a point where the people that had what I want, and I don't mean that in a nefarious way or necessarily a financial way, but, you know, even in a spiritual way, I needed to look beyond that group. I needed to make connections beyond that group. I needed to, I needed to get out in the world better. I needed to find, you know, connection changed for me before all of my, you know, my bedfellows, and I don't mean that all sexual, but were people that did what I did. And there's a lot of false connections, like, man, the greatest guy, like, in realization, looking back, like, I didn't even know anything about these people. We all just got blitzed together and laughed and did really stupid things, like, you know, getting blitzed and then driving home from said bar. You know, how many times? Like I always say, when people say the world is not fair, I go, yeah, it's not, because I should have way more than one DUI.
Yes. Oh, me and you both. I'm telling you, I get I should not even be living. That's how many stupid things I did while I was drinking. And, you know, don't we all, right? I even said to my husband the other night, we're coming home from dinner, and I said, man, I don't miss those days of me like gripping the steering wheel and like hyper-focused on staying in the middle of the two white lines so I don't get pulled over, making sure I'm driving the speed limit. You know, I just don't have to worry about those days. But same reasons that you said about AA, I think that was the way for me. And it was no judgment. It was just I needed something that was richer and richer in terms of value to me, more of a personal level. And I actually ended up working with a coach, one-on-one coach. And it was that experience. It was a male coach working with him that really shifted the whole trajectory of my life and my direction. And I am forever grateful for that experience. And it was that experience that made me think, you know, maybe someday I could be a coach. Actually, he said that to me, Carrie, I think someday you could be a coach. I think you can start your own business. And I think you should share your story with the world. And I was like, oh, hell no, am I doing that? I'm not telling anyone about my relationship with alcohol. Are you crazy? And now, seriously, if you Google my name, you can pretty much read everything there is to know about me. I've disclosed quite a bit of my personal life, and you know, even my husband and I being in a gray area marriage 5 years ago, and almost, you know, ended our relationship, to my gray area career, to my gray area drinking, and, you know, my childhood trauma and all the things, like, it's all out there. And I never thought I would share that. But you know what I realized? One thing I took away from AA is that, you know, when we tell the truth, when we always tell the truth, there's something about the freedom that comes with that. Like, we don't have to worry about what's holding us back, because we're the ones who are opting to shed the light and come, you know, shed the light on our darkest areas. Therefore, we own it. And when we own it, something shifts with our identity. And we become the person that we actually want to be. We can leave that identity behind. And I think for me, that was part of my personal issue with AA, was I saying, hi, I'm Carrie, I'm an alcoholic, and I always have to come to these meetings for the rest of my life because I'm always going to be an alcoholic. That did not work for me because my identity, I wanted to get away from the negativity and the victim mentality that I was carrying around since I was 7 years old. I didn't want to have that baggage anymore. I wanted to leave all that behind. And so now, it's funny, I rarely say even sober. I usually say that I'm alcohol free. Not that I oppose the word recovery or sobriety, because I think they're beautiful words. And I think for those that it works, it absolutely does. But for me, it's what worked. It's what helped me really shift into this new identity. And it's a huge part of my program when I work with clients, is shifting who you think you are into who it is that you desire to be. Because when we start saying powerful words over our life, everything shifts. We actually become that person versus reciting to ourselves who we don't want to be anymore.
Yep. Yeah. A great example for me personally was being in a situation, someone offered me a drink. No, thank you. Oh, what are you driving tonight? I said, no, I don't drink. And then it was that. Oh, okay. You know, and that's just how it is now. I don't drink. That's my life. That's who I am. That's what it is.
It's not a big deal. It's just not a big deal.
Yeah. Let's dig in. And again, you've put it out there, your story. And if people want to know more, you know, search Carrie, you can find out more about you being open about your trauma and things like that. But two valuable things you said, 7 years old trauma. I want to dig into the reframing of that trauma, ditching the victim mentality. And then what you mentioned about your marriage, that's what I run into a lot is I get a lot of worry from people that, gosh, if I get sober, is my relationship going to end? I'm like, I don't know, but it's going to change. I guarantee it's going to change because you're going to change. So
absolutely.
Let's talk first, ditching the victim mentality for you and that reframing of trauma, if you would.
Oh, yeah. Well, that took a long time.
Sure.
Long time, a lot of work, right?
44 years here.
Yeah. 50 something for me. You know, it's one of those things where, first of all, you have to acknowledge what it is. The victimhoodness that I wore so proudly across my forehead for so long was a way to protect myself. Mm. It was a way to use my excuses of the past for my behavior of today. And that got really old. You know, it was time to buck up and accept the responsibility and realize that holding on to all the things that happened to me when I was a child, even, you know, high school, middle school, especially, all those things were really an extension of who I thought I was at that time. Truly. Mm. Like at age 7, I started smoking. I declared to my mom that I'd be a cigarette smoker and therefore I became one. And something shifted when I declared that statement to my mom, I'm going to be a cigarette smoker. And she said, no, you're not. And I said, no, yes, I am. I decided in that moment. Mm-hmm. And many things decided in that moment. It wasn't just me being a cigarette smoker. It was the fact that I wanted to be a rebel. I wanted to stand out. I wanted the attention. I wanted to be the bad kid. And therefore I became it. Mm-hmm. And so that behavior followed me through my elementary school days into junior high and high school. And it wasn't until I went off to college that things start to shift a little bit more for me. I started to become more adultish, if you will, met my husband. And, but even in my 30s, you know, I would still throw up some allegations or excuses as to why I was the way that I was because of all of my past trauma. And this is the reason why I'm this way. So get over it. Mm-hmm. I used everything as an excuse. It was my way out. But here's the thing with trauma. And, you know, I've done a lot of trauma courses and studying on trauma. And when I realized that it was so beneficial for me to do that, it was a way to keep me safe. But I don't need my younger version of myself to take care of myself anymore. I understand my brain now. I understand why things happened the way that they did. And I realized that they happened for me, that a lot of the things happened helped shape who I am today. So thereby, I can do the work that I do. And I truly feel that God has called me to do this work. I was never seeking to start my own business. I never really thought this would happen. Matter of fact, when I decided to start this business, which really found me, I was working a great six-figure job at Porsche and loving life. And sure. There was no problems, right? I mean, things were good. And I never saw myself leaving, but it found me. And I realized now that, yeah, I was groomed my whole life for this, to do what I'm doing today. And what an honor, what a gift. But that took a little bit longer than just a couple of years.
Sure. Well, I think it's that acceptance and you know, in my higher power, and we share, you know, same faith, is that it wasn't punishment, it was preparation. But again, that was the shift in mindset for me was, you know, I'll speak oftentimes to just, you know, classrooms, usually juniors and seniors in high school. And I've had a couple, you know, where a kid will ask, like, why are you so vulnerable about this? And I said, because I want you to understand that I was able to reflect back on the traumas that occurred and say and accept that it says absolutely nothing about me. Sure, I was a little kid, some nefarious, terrible things occurred. Sure. But it didn't say anything about me or who I am now as an adult. But it certainly gave me a sense of empathy and understanding for others that have been through similar things, to be able to connect, to share stories that resonate, to offer hope, healing, all these things. So yeah, I just look at it very different now. Like it did when I talk about it, you know, it used to tense up my body and hurt, and it just, that just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. It's amazing how we get moved through that and how much better we have. You know, ultimately, I think what we're all striving for is inner peace.
Mm.
You know, inner peace. And it's something I spend time with a lot on for myself and my clients is where do you not have internal peace? You know, there's a couple of areas. There's with people we associate with, whether it's family, friends, colleagues, whatever. It's where we live, our environment, our city, our house, even like your home office, wherever, you know, just really detailed. How much peace do you have with all that? And then also with our purpose in life, how connected are you with your purpose? Do you have internal peace over even why you believe you're here? Yeah. You know, and also your physical health, you know, mental health, physical health, in every, you know, whether how much you weigh, how much fitness you get, your own mental well-being, like your physical health in general, how at peace are you? And then the last one is provision. You know, are you worried about money? Are you happy with the money that you make? Are you thinking about how are you going to make your, you know, bill? How are you going to pay your mortgage or your rent payment on Friday? You know what I mean? Like if those things are keeping you up at night, then you don't have peace. We always want more, by the way.
Yes.
So when I talk about provision, like, let's not be greedy people. Like we all want more. I want more. I want a lot more. Right. So right. Don't you, we all do, but it's like, does the bills keep me up at night? And honestly, no, they don't. How blessed am I? Like I'm one of the richest women in the universe. And I don't mean monetarily, cause I don't, you know, I'm not super wealthy in that aspect, but I'm very rich when it comes to, I don't have to worry about, am I going to be able to, you know, pay my mortgage or have food on my table.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, I go to the grocery store the other day, it was $200-something for food for 1 week for my husband and I. And I'm eating last night, you know, and it was a good sized portion. I think it was probably like 8 ounces of fish and some rice and a vegetable. And as I'm eating this, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, in Gaza right now, this could feed like a whole family of eight.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, how blessed am I? How rich am I that I get to eat this whole thing? I mean, you want to talk about gratitude. Oh my gosh. That'll bring you to your knees when you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're fighting over a piece of bread.
Agreed. Yeah. And thank you for sharing that, because that's often my thought too. When if I lose sight of, I think our bill was like 180 or something. And, grocery bill, and I, you know, my first thought was like, oh my God, inflation and how much it's gone. I'm like, stop complaining. Like, you know, you have multiple revenue streams that you've worked hard to, of course, to obtain. You left a 20-year career, all these things changed in your life and it's panning out. Like, stop complaining. You're so fortunate. Like, there's people that are living on what you make in 5 minutes, and that's what they're living on in a day. And I by no means have a huge income. I'm nowhere near six figures, but still it's a reality. It's like, but you know, be humble, be grateful. Look at what you do have, not the what you don't. And oftentimes, you know, my big slogan, Gary, is no outside solutions to inside problems. And it's like, that's an external locus. I'm looking outside of myself, not internally, like what I do have, that state of gratitude and appreciation.
Yes. Have you ever heard of the Desiderata?
No.
The Desiderata, it is this incredible, incredible, it's a poem. If you don't mind, I want to read it because you just said something. It's really short. It says, beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you could conceive him to be. That poem was written by, it's Max, I forget his name now. Oh, dang. Oh, Max Ehrman. So that poem was on my wall as a child growing up. So I got to see that every day. And I love how it says, you know, that I have a right to be here. I'm no less than the trees and the stars. I have a right to be here. That poem and hearing that is what kept me going as a kid. And because there were some really dark times.
Yes.
And that I'm a child of the universe. And I was the only believer in my family, believe it or not, when I was younger. And I think it was my faith. And part of that was this poem helped me get to that faith, is what carried me through. And I don't know what you said, something that as you were talking, I can't remember what you said now, but I was like, oh my God, that's, to me, that's the desiderata, that we just need to be at peace with where we are. And again, this goes back to gratitude, because it's so easy to complain. I'm a chronic complainer, to be honest with you. I have gotten better. There's a great book out there called A Complaint-Free World. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Oh my gosh. Another, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. So he talks about wearing a bracelet and you know, I'm showing you right now, like I've just a hair tie. And every time you complain, you have to switch it to the other wrist. So you consciously become aware of how often you're complaining. And the goal is to get to 21 days with no complaining. Well, let me tell you, I never made it past day one. There was always something. There was something that, I mean, even if it was under my breath, which he said, out of fairness, you didn't have to count that one, only if you said it out loud, because we're always going to have thoughts of complaining inside of our head.
Sure.
But nevertheless, it was really good practice. And then I did two bracelets, Jason. I did one for cussing and one for complaining. And sad to say, I didn't do very well with either. So, you know, so there's that. But listen, we're all human. We can just do our best. But I think gratitude truly is the answer for everything. And if we want to look for the negative, and if we want to speak bad words over ourselves, and we're so stupid and dumb and we're not wanted and all those things, then, you know, if that's working for you, you get to keep that label for yourself. You absolutely get to have it.
Yeah.
And so my saying is, being in a gray area is a choice. You get to be there, or you can choose something different. And for me, it was like, I had to choose something different. Oh, you asked about my husband.
Yeah, I want to get into that here in a second, but I'm loving what you're sharing here. Because have you dug into the archives of past Knocking Doors Down podcast episodes? The Knocking Doors Down podcast archive is available to you for free. Check it out. Here's a snippet from when Charlie Sheen was on the podcast.
AA is not the best place for a famous atheist. I kept looking for that fucking chapter. What, you know? So yeah, but it's not a one size fits all.
Sure,
you know, it's like saying that we all think the same, like our brains are built the same. They're just not.
Right. Yeah.
There's such uniqueness involved.
Check out this episode and so many more in the Knocking Doors Down archive. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button, give this video a thumb up, leave a comment, and share with somebody else that you know will get value out of the Knocking Doors Down podcast. You know, for me, you know, language is something I've become more conscious of, my language. You have to do is go back and listen through the history of this podcast and how much it's changed. I mean, come on, a lot of people, the main thing to go is, I started when you had Charlie Sheen on, like, yeah, a lot of language in that episode. But that's one of the things I've changed. And then with the complaining part, or the negative self-talk, that's what I wanted to reflect on is I noticed for me that it was the stuff that was planted there a long time ago. And it didn't start out in my voice, but it continued to go and go and go. Then it eventually all became in my voice. And that was a huge shift that I had to take on too. Was, okay, I might hear some negative things, but it's no longer going to be in my voice. And if I'm hearing it in other people's voice, it kind of goes with the, you know, how a lot of my amends and apologies went in my recovery. And I'm going to use some language here. It's really none of my fucking business how it's landed with those people. That's then their decision.
Right.
I did my part, you know? That's so right. Same thing with those negative voices. It's like, I'm not giving you effing space in my head. I'm just not.
And the moment we start catching those, and this is part of the complaint-free world and with a bracelet, is the moment we start bringing awareness about how often we're doing it. I've gotten so much better, by the way. I'm not as bad as I used to be, but with the complaining and the cussing. I definitely don't cuss as much as I used to, but listen, I'm married to a man who, and I don't want to put this on my husband because it's not him. My dad was this way too, but you know, in the construction world, both my sons worked at the same company for a while. They were all here, and you know, now
my father was a truck driver, Gary. So yeah,
there you go. Not to put the blame on the blue collar workers, but you know, definitely, it was, you know, it's influence when you hear it, and it's just
environment
sometimes. It's the environment, and I've gotten so much better. My husband's gotten so much better, and my kids. So it's definitely one of those things where, you know, if you just start bringing awareness to it, you start to make some shifts and changes. So I got a shirt that says, "I love Jesus, but I cuss a little." And my husband, when I got the shirt, he's like, "You might want to cross off a little and put a lot." And I'm like, "Shut up," you know, let's not go there, but it's all about awareness. That's it. Yeah. Every time we catch ourselves, we're shifting our neural pathways inside of our brain, and we can start creating new pathways. And before you know it, it's a habit like everything else, right? We become habitualized in what we do, like the way we talk, the way we act, the things that, you know, we even choose to watch or scroll on Instagram. Like, it's pretty much the same thing all the time because you're habitualizing yourself over and over again. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make a change, you have to bring awareness to it first, you know, and you have to have the desire. You got to be committed to yourself. You got to be willing to have an identity shift, change your daily habits, and do it every day.
Yep, absolutely.
That's the recipe.
All right. Well, let's dig in, though, because I've had so many people ask about relationships, especially where one person, either both individuals in the relationship recovery process should be a really great thing for them, or it's one of the individuals in that concern of what the dynamic of the relationship will become. I mean, what was it with you, with your husband? I mean, because a lot of people, as a neat lady that, I'm drawing a blank on her name. I had a conversation with, not here on the podcast, but she was a dentist. Her ex-husband was a dentist. And the reason they got divorced, he's like, "You're just not the same person." She's like, "You married an alcoholic." And then it dawned on her, like, oh my God, he was solely attracted to the behaviors of that alcoholic. And then she was the one that filed for divorce. She's like, "Yeah, this isn't going to work."
Yeah. Yeah, very common, by the way. I don't want to say very common, but it is pretty common in terms of like my clients that I've worked with and even in my own life, where when one person decides to make a change, something happens. They start to elevate, you know, they're growing spiritually, emotionally, professionally, whatever. They're growing on that personal development level. And if their spouse or their partner is not at the same level or not growing at the same level, then you start to get this huge gap. And in that gap, things start to become more evident with resentment, with loneliness, not communicating the way that you normally would. And that's what happened with my husband and I. So it's kind of a 2-3-fold thing with him and with Rob and I. And we shared very openly about it. We've done 2 videos on my YouTube channel where we talked about it, how much I resented him for staying drinking when I quit and so forth. But what happened was, so I quit drinking, you know, almost 8 years ago. I started my business in 18. And 2019 rolls around and he was having a really awful couple years at work. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's been at the same company now 27 years. So there was some shifts that had happened. He was just working all kinds of crazy hours. He was really stressed out. He's got a lot of responsibility and his head was down. His head was down all the time. He was so stressed. He was wigged out. It was like, and I'm over here, you know, my first full year in business. And I'm like, as happy as can be, trying to get all excited about my day. And so when he would come home and have his head down, depressed or angered or whatever is going on. And I'm like, "Hey, babe, you'll never guess what happened today." And he didn't want to hear that, you know? Right. So we started seeing some problems at that point. And I was alcohol free for a couple of years at this point, and he wasn't. And that was one of those things where I was super annoyed about it, but I chose to pretend as though I was okay with him still drinking. Mm. Now he rarely drank. He rarely had anything to drink while at home. It was usually if we went out. And then he would have like a, you know, maybe a martini and then a couple of beers or something like that. And he asked me a few times, you know, during that course or in the very beginning when I quit drinking, are you going to be okay if I still drink? Well, being the nice wife I am, I was like, no, of course not. You can still drink. But deep down, I was resentful. I was so resentful, Jason. I can't even tell you. And I kept it hidden. So that was on me.
Yeah.
Because I kept my mouth shut, right? I didn't tell him how I was really feeling. So I had this internal resentment. I had my business doing one thing and his business is doing the other. And we're literally two ships going in different directions and the communication wasn't there. And I came home from a trip to Guatemala. I was there for a mindset retreat and I just really got clear when I was there. And I came home and I said, I don't think I want to be strapped into this marriage for another 30 years. If this is what it's going to be, and that was our 30th year, by the way, I'm like, I don't want to be married for another 30 years if this is what it's going to be. Like, we're just not on the same page. And so, you know, it was not a great conversation, obviously. And so we literally dug our heels in and we worked through it. I didn't want a divorce. I just didn't want to be married anymore. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like I didn't want to end the marriage, but I didn't want to keep going if this is how it's going to be.
Yes.
And so we worked really hard to get ourselves back together again. And he lost a bunch of weight and I lost some weight, and not that we're overweight, cause we're not really, but we both slimmed down and worked out and we really were talking more and he was more involved in my business. And then a couple months passed and now it's December of whatever year it was, 6 years ago now. And he says, was it 6 years? What's 6 years from now? Is that 18? No, it was 19. No, it was 20. It was 20. I can't remember the exact year. It was a while ago. He said, I'm going to quit drinking at the end of this year. My last beer is going to be on December 31st. And my first question to him, or my first response was, oh my God, please don't do that for me. And he goes, I'm not. I'm truly doing it for me. I'm finding that there's no benefits to drinking. I do want to be in solidarity with you, but I'm really doing it for me. I just think health-wise, oh, and he was turning 50. So being that he's going to be 56 this year, I think it's 5 years. He just celebrated 5 years. So he said, I don't want to be, you know, in my 50s and still drinking. I just want to end it. And I was like, okay. So he did, he quit. And it did shift quite a bit for us, to be honest with you. Because now we're, you know, he's very much of an advocate for what I do. You know, he was very active in my Facebook group at the time and he'd go live and he'd share stories. And I was like, oh my God, this is so great. And he got super involved with what I was doing. And that just shifted everything for me. But yeah. I think the biggest takeaway for those that are listening, and this happens a lot with my clients, is it is somewhat normal when somebody starts to work on themselves, if the partner isn't on the equal page of wanting to better themselves in some way, there will be most likely some strife in that relationship, because it's hard to continue down a path when one person's changing and the other one does not want to or refuses to.
Yeah.
It is a reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you were talking about that, you know, that carrying that resentment, it was, you know, after my divorce, the attempt to work my sobriety and then date people who still drank. And of course, subsequently led to me falling off, me, not their fault, but holding that in and not communicating that was a terrible thing. Like, I remember working my sobriety. And then when it came time to physical intimacy and this person had been drinking, I'm like, yeah, no. I don't think so.
Yeah.
This is really unattractive, really unappealing. I don't even know if I'm getting genuine you or someone that has imbibed enough of something to quell your anxieties and everything else that alcohol does. You know, people always, oh, it makes you do stupid things. No. Our thoughts are already there. Alcohol is an amazing anxiety drug that eliminates the idea and concept of the consequences of our actions. Okay.
No kidding.
You know, so that was a huge shift for me. And now being in a relationship that she's just a straight edge person, doesn't appeal at all. No recovery there or anything, just no desire, which is a blessing. But you said something really valuable about your husband too, is that people forget this is a poison just on a health level. Like when you hit 40, alcohol is already bad for you. But as our bodies, as you know, when we get older, certain things don't work the way they used to. We don't get nutrients the way we do. You know, we're kind of on the backside, so to speak, or whatever it is. It's like, it's just terrible for you, period. Like, I just challenge people that don't have a problem. Like, hey, just take some time off. Take a break. You know, give yourself a little space. So,
yeah, I highly recommend listening to Andrew Huberman's episode on alcohol. I forget which one it was. It's like a year and a half old now. But if anybody's sort of on the fence about it, I recommend listening to that. Because I always say, listen, I'm not on a crusade against alcohol. So you want to drink, go for it. But yes, I do believe, same. I believe, Jason, with all my heart and soul, just like with cigarettes. By the way, I quit drinking years ago. If anybody's curious, I don't smoke anymore. I mean, I quit smoking years ago. But you know how smoking is today, right? It's like, if you smoke, you're like, wait, what? That's still a thing, right? I mean, because I don't know hardly anybody that smokes cigarettes anymore. Not anybody in my circle. And not that, you know, it's a bad thing, but it's just like, it's just not acceptable, right? It's just not acceptable to smoke anymore. Like when I grew up in the 70s, it was, I mean, my goodness, even when I was working in the 80s, I'd be smoking at my job. Like I worked at Waterbed Gallery as a manager and I was in there puffing away. I smoked like 2 packs a day at that point. I'd be smoking in the back with all these waterbeds. People were coming in to buy a waterbed and I'm back there puffing away on my cigarettes. How disgusting is that, right? But I think that there will be a point where cigarettes, or alcohol rather, is going to be like cigarettes is today. It's going to be in the mid, I think it's going to be in the mid 2030s, where it's going to be like, oh my gosh, you still drink? Like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I think the tide is shifting. I really do. And I see it that the longer I've been sober, the more I see it. I'm pretty involved with the non-alcoholic community. I started a group here in Richmond, Virginia, where I live, a social group. We have, oh my gosh, almost 1,200 members. I just started it last year. I also started a networking group for business owners that no longer drink, called Clear Minds Connect. So, you know, it's a thing. Like we're out there making a difference and we're making progress. And I think it's great, but it's about attraction rather than promotion, right?
Yeah.
It's about just showing others what it looks to live a sober life and that it truly is a superpower, like my friend from Thailand says. It gives you the edge, it gives you the one up. You become like a whole different person when it's like the veil's lifted, you know, you can see clearly for the first time. It's like, oh my God, this is what the road looked like the whole time. My life looked like this the whole time. I couldn't see it because I was living in a freaking fog.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Well, boy, I know I could talk to you all day. I'm loving this. We're going to have to do this again down the line, even a bonus episode. But people sit and think that like with alcohol, that it's like, okay, well, I had a hangover and the hangover is gone. There's a delusion about that alcohol's then out of my body. It's not how it works. And I think we educate further, but we could keep going. Let's jump into some of those random questions here. But I want to, if people want to connect with you, of course, I'm going to put the links in the description. But what's your preferred way of people connecting with you, through your website or social media?
Great Tonic's my website. You can go, it's GRAYTONIC, by the way. But I love LinkedIn. LinkedIn's my jam. So I'm the only Carrie Schwer on LinkedIn. If you find me, connect with me, send me a message and just say you heard me on Jason's podcast, Knocking Doors Down. And I will be like, listen, any friend of yours is a friend of mine. So just say that. And I would love to connect with you, have a conversation. I'm super open and friendly like that. I would talk to anybody. So send me a message, connect with me. I would love to just say, hey.
Absolutely. Well, I'll connect with you personally because I've got, I didn't want to pick your brain further, but let's jump into those random questions. I mean, you said two of my favorite words have come up in this Porsche Ferrari. So what can I say? I'm a motorsports guy. I love sports cars. Dream car. What's your dream car?
Well, my husband would want me to say, a Ferrari for sure, which by the way, next weekend he'll be driving one. He'll be driving a 488 Spider, a Huracan Lamborghini, and the new Z06 Corvette. We're doing this open road tour day thing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but my dream car right now is definitely a 992 911 Turbo S. Or, because I'm a Porsche girl, or, oh my gosh, I love the new GT4 RS. Oh, I had a Cayman, which is, you know, the GT4 is a Cayman, but it's a GT. And that car is just fire.
Yes.
But yeah, my everyday driver would be a 992 911 Turbo S.
You landed it with me. That's my exact, the GT4 dream car. Yeah. I would say an everyday.
The RS. It has to be, yes, the RS.
The RS for sure.
Yes.
If it was an everyday driver, I'd probably go, because I got teenagers, it would be a Panamera, so you can have the, four doors
Panamera
in and out.
Panamera all day long, yep, too. Yep. Yes. Cheers to that.
I very rarely get to talk cars with anyone. That's not a usual random question, but I had to go with it. All right, here, what fun one should I go? What some people might be surprised to learn about you, maybe an interest or a hobby that you don't normally share?
Oh my gosh, I love painting. And I don't mean like artistic painting. I can't do that. But I am obsessed with painting a wall in my house. Like, there's something so awesome about it. Like, I get in my zen and I just, most people hate it and I love the whole process. I don't have any walls to paint right now, so I'm kind of bored, but nothing really needs it. So, but yeah, I really like spending time with my dogs. And surprisingly, I started hiking last year and I thought I might hate it, but I actually really like it. We hiked the Grand Canyon last year. Which is today's post on social, but it's really cool.
Yes, so, a lot of freedom in hiking for sure. I can relate to that. And for those that aren't watching on YouTube, I mean, when you turned on your camera before we started hitting record, I was like, the color scheme, I'm loving it. I love the couch and everything. So
look, my top even matches. Like, it's, this is my home office, so Yes, I love this home office. It's very nice. Thank you.
Very well put together. Best and worst advice you ever received, if you can recollect.
Oh, gosh. Well, I can't think of something right off my top of my head for worst advice, but I will tell you this. It was listening to others and not listening to my inner voice. Because there's times where our own intuition, we know best. And if it's fighting against that, oh man, is it wrong? And so many times I put value into other people's opinion rather than my own, or what God was trying to tell me to do or nudge me to do. And listening to somebody else, it was awful. The best advice was with my business. So it's a long story. I won't go into the whole thing, but I was going to start a small group at my church. It didn't work out. They already had a recovery group. They wouldn't let me start another group under gray area drinking. They said no to it. And by the way, rejection is God's protection. And I just learned that from Jamie Kern Lehman, her new book, Worthy. But yeah, rejection is God's protection. And he protected me during that time, because I don't know if I'd be here today. So I was so angry at this church for telling me no, that I was so mad. My girlfriend called me that day and she said, what happened? I told her the story. She said, why are you allowing the church to dictate what you should do? You should just do something on your own. And I said, yeah, I'll show that church. I don't need them. And that is how my business got started. So that was the best advice I've ever received, because I don't know if I would have been like thinking I could do it if I didn't have somebody that believed in me and was like, why couldn't you do it? Yeah. Like, you're Carrie Schwer. Hello. Like, you accomplish everything you want, right? So I was like, yeah, I'll show them. And that's here we are.
Yeah. And it goes to show that beauty of sometimes just that one other person that helps continue that spark of self-belief is so valuable. You're stuck on a deserted island. You have one music artist's greatest hits and one movie. What are they?
Oh my gosh. Greatest hits. Oh man, my music is all over the place. That is a very, very, very difficult one. As much as I want to say like a really cool band, because I like everything from like hair metal to hard rock to Norah Jones to Sting to Fleetwood Mac to, you know, I'm like all over the place, right? I would probably say Elevation Worship, which is a Christian band, and only because I think I would need it for sure. Although there'd be some other cool, you know, listen, I could work out to Metallica and you right. know, switch right over to Elevation Worship in a nanosecond. So that's how I work. But in the movie, wow, that's a tough one too. I just don't know if I have like a favorite movie. I don't know. That is so hard. I don't know.
Mine shifts all the time, so don't worry about it. When people have asked me back, what about you? It's like, oh, it shifts. You know, music artist usually stays the same, but yeah, movie shifts. And
I like the sappy movies. So
okay.
I'd probably just something a feel good story, probably maybe a dog movie of some sort.
Oh, there
like
you
I
go.
Don't know.
Have you ever seen Art of Racing in the Rain?
Yes.
Oh. Right.
So good.
Dogs, so good. Motorsports, you know, Ferrari, so all good. Of it. Oh, I love that movie.
Yes, it's all of it, all of the above. So, okay, that.
All that's right. Yeah. People that haven't seen it, be ready for a tearjerker. Oh, my God. That yes. movie just. And yeah, the Christian artist, it's interesting because ironically, he's my tattoo artist, too. But I guess he would be like my sponsor in Celebrate Recovery. But he recently got me into Christian reggae. And like, I didn't even know it existed. Like, this is so awesome.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either. You have to shoot me some names.
I will. I'll email you some. Okay, last one. Dinner with any one person, living or not. Who would they be and why? Can't be a family member. Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Right. Just.
I mean, there were so many things I'd want to ask. Like, and I think, you know, I just... in awe, but just yeah, for sure, there's no doubt.
Do you know what your first question would be? Because I don't. I would probably be like, can you start the conversation, please?
I would probably say something like, I don't know if I'd ask the question or if I would make a statement, something along the lines of, I can't believe I'm sitting here with you.
Right.
Like, I don't know what to say. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know what to say. So can you help me ask you what I'm supposed to ask you? Because I'm in awe right now. Right. I would just be honest.
Yeah. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. And yes, please, let's do it again down the line. Even if we just get a shorter conversation, little bonus episode. Thank you so much for your time. This is where, Carrie, I give you the floor. Anything maybe to someone struggling or if they have a loved one struggling that you might want to lend?
Yeah, listen to your inner voice. And if it is a loved one, you can't change them. You cannot change that person. You can pray for them. You can encourage them, but you can't change them. Do not take that responsibility on for yourself or feel like you have to or you need to. That is on that person. But if it's you and you know it, you already hear those voices inside like, it's time for you to start working on it. Listen to them. Don't keep pushing them away because you know what? They're only going to get louder. And at some point, you're going to be in a place where you don't have a choice. Let it be a choice now while you're in a gray area, or if you are severely abusing, let it be a choice before you're forced into a decision that you don't want, because it's so much more empowering when you have the floor.
Absolutely. Carrie Schwert, thank you so much for your time. Again, all of Carrie's information is in the podcast description. And on that note, remember, no outside solutions to inside problems, and keep knocking doors down.